I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren. And today on the show, we're here to commemorate and celebrate Anne Saxelby, the founder of Cutting the Curd and owner of Saxelby Cheese. Her passing away was a shock to the cheese community, and in the weeks since her death, many people have mentioned her many great qualities, especially that of being very kind and generous, to name a few. I would like to capture her spirit by talking with some of our past and current hosts of Cutting the Curd. Today on the program, we have Aaron Foster and Carlos Yescas. And then we'll also be sharing notes and memos from Alina Santigade, Diane Stemple, and Sophie Sellinger, and Greg Blaze as well, and Jessica Kesselman. Thanks, guys, for participating with me on this tribute. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be back.
Thank you, Kara.
Yeah. My hope is that through this episode, we'll provide a catharsis to the cheesemongers and cheesemakers out there. I hope for you guys as well. I know this has been an incredible shock to everyone. I think everyone's still really dealing with this in their own way. I guess to kick things off, I'm gonna start with the basics. Carlos, how did you first meet Anne?
Oof, I just started crying, so sorry about this. I was just not expecting this emotion, but anyway, here we are. I met Anne at the store in at the Essex Market. I had moved from Europe to the United States, and I was, you know, a frequent of many of the cheese stores in New York City. And I went to the store and I met her there. Kind of introduced myself that, you know, I was someone that was very interested in cheese at that time. I was still not fully working in the industry. But I introduced myself, and she was, from that first moment on, she was just so wonderful, so caring, so open and excited to hear about what we were doing in Mexico. I then got to know her really well, but it was really at the store, she being a cheesemonger and me being a customer of cheese.
Oh, okay. Very cool. I didn't realize that. And Aaron, I'd like to flip over to you because you have a cheese shop, Foster Sundry. Did Anne influence you in any ways with your cheese shop?
I would say in many ways, not so specific. So she certainly influenced me in the sense that I had a high bar to meet in terms of New York cheese stores. And you know, one which I just don't think anybody could live up to, but certainly, you know, I first met Anne probably just before she opened the store, and her store, and back in 2005 2006, somewhere in there, as part of like a crew of cheese kids that would hang out, and we all worked for or were like associated with competitors at the time, and I worked for Artisanal, and I think she had just finished up at Murray's, and we all just kind of got together outside of work. It maybe a little bit reminded me of that Wile E. Coyote cartoon where he like punches the clock with the sheepdog, and then they have lunch together, and then they go back and do their jobs. And yeah, we would all go out and talk shop and taste and just, you know, talk about the new cheeses we discovered. But it was just clear early on that she was super fucking genuine, and just extremely like one, a person who somehow managed to be genuine and unironic, but also not saccharine and boring, which I feel like is just a difficult combination to manage, but she did with aplomb. In terms of the store, I think she just set a just an incredible example. And at the time, it was really difficult to find American cheeses, except for the big ones. And they would come through distributors, and she just kind of went out and hunted them down. And in a way that was relationship based and not sort of just their utility to her and her shop. So I try to be, when I think about being about balancing running a business with having, you know, values and being a good person and making sure that you sort of hold up your end of the social contract, I think of Anne, and that influenced me greatly.
Yeah, I mean, I think you did a great job of explaining also. I was going to ask you about what the cheese scene was like when Anne was first coming up, because like you mentioned, we were all, I don't want to say kids exactly, but like it was another era of it. And
we were children. We were kids. We were so young.
We were once kids. I mean, just like the fact that we were discovering cheeses all around the Northeast, at least. And then I think Anne brought in some Midwest cheese as well. I mean, or she was just really all over. She was so good at networking directly with the farms and then showcasing them in a way like when some of us started at Murray's Cheese in that time period, they were doing that, but it wasn't to the extent that she took it. And I think, I really applaud her always for that. Carlos, I was curious, why do you think Anne's message about the local artisanal cheese scene was so poignant? Do you think, you know, she was able to connect with so many people across the community. How do you think she was able to do that?
Right. And I think that, you know, to sort of build on Aaron, was that, you know, we were kids. We are in 2005, 2006, when we were talking about, we were all in New York, and the cheese scene was just so different. Like, I remember, you know, for example, there was three colors of Appenzeller that sold at the cheese counters, and people were very excited about those three Appenzellers. But there wasn't that many American cheeses that were kind of known by everyone or that people would recognize them just by name. And it was really at that moment that something really started changing. And I think I have thought about it a lot in the past, you know, couple of weeks since her passing, that, you know, she took this, what had been for so long a devalued product. You know, American cheese, it has all of the bad connotations of, you know, singles and, you know, the melty stuff that you don't want to eat. And she took this sort of devalued idea and tried to figure out how to make it different. And I think her genuine care for the American producer, for the American terroir, really end up creating a situation in which that genuine care end up touching not only producers, but other cheesemongers and many, many other stores. And, you know, as we have seen for the past week and a half, you know, all the tributes from restaurants and other people are kind of like, we're touched by that sort of care for products from the United States. And, you know, I think about it when I first started going to the Essex market, you know, there was another cheese store in the Essex market, you know, that was Formaggio's from Boston that had opened one in New York. And Formaggio's in Boston is known for, you know, not only having the staples of European cheeses, but also bringing very unique, sort of interesting cheeses from Europe. And then I think Anne's response to that sort of uniqueness from Formaggio's and all the staples was like, let's try to do this same thing, but for the American products. And so I think that ended up creating sort of an impetus for her of connecting with so many people. And that's why I think she ended up connecting to so many people and ended up actually changing the scene forever, along with, you know, other people as well. But I think Anne was instrumental in that change.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. That's it's the truth. Yeah.
I think what's interesting is that it was so unusual. Like it puts into context just how much work she did when we're like, yeah, there were these cheese shops, but she actually went out and found American cheese. It just puts into context how far American cheese has come in the cultural consciousness, as well as just what's being made out there with both the quality and quantity in the last 15 or so years. And just how obviously Anne was such a huge part of that. I mean, I think there was also in the market at the time, I believe Daphne had opened her stand as well. And it was like right across from Anne. And it was just like, you could go there between Formaggio and Daphne and Anne and just have this incredible experience in a market that I think a lot of New Yorkers that would have been shopping at Murray's probably had never been to, or been shopping at the East Village Cheese or buying from Artisanal online or Zingerman's, like probably had never been to that market. So, and I think it was just also so important that she chose not just the area of American cheese to work in, but the place she chose to do the work that she did.
Yeah, she was so good at connecting and also introducing people. I found out Elena kind of was introduced to the cheese world through Anne. I had no idea. Actually, we have a voice memo from Elena, so I'd like to play that here. Listeners, this is Elena Santigade's note about Anne.
My name is Elena Santigade, and I was a host of Cutting the Curd from 2018 to 2020. How did I first meet Anne? I actually have no idea how I first met her. And I think the reason that I can't point to the first meeting is because she was so much in the ether of cheese for me. I knew of her so much, so long before I ever met her. And I visited her shop very shyly and in awe and bought cheese from her. But I don't know when I first met Anne. I do remember when I first had a cheese tasting with Anne as a buyer, and it was one of the most fun and exciting moments of my career as a buyer. I remember that she brought tons of cheeses. It was like we tasted 15 cheeses, and she ended up unfurling like a roll of butcher paper, like it was a scroll. And she placed all the cheeses down on the butcher paper, and she wrote the names of the cheeses on the butcher paper all in like 1 minute. And it was so approachable and badass and cool and surprising. And I'll never forget that. It was a lot of fun. So how did Anne influence me? Well, I consider Anne one of my cheese career benefactors. She really, in many ways, gave me my start in cheese. And the specific way that she did that, or I should say the first way that she did that, because she sort of did it twice, was that she actually had me as a guest on the show when she and Sophie were producing and hosting the show. And I was not working in cheese at all yet, but I was making cheese and meeting up with this little group of urban cheesemakers. And we were all, there was a handful of us making cheese in the city and connecting over it. And kind of like word got out that we were doing this. And Anne asked me to be on the show. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, I felt like this is insane that I would be on Anne Saxelby's podcast. But it was the first time that I really started thinking that maybe I could enter this amazing world of cheese. And she really opened that door for me. Then, you know, she influenced me later, also again, very directly, when I got to become one of the hosts of the show. And that was sort of one of my culminating cheese experiences, and one of the most fun things I ever did in cheese. More generally, she influenced me by being herself, I think, which is something so many of us can relate to. She just was Anne. She was herself through and through, and it was so clear and so pure who she was. Like, she was always exactly who she was. And so what does that even mean? Anne, she was so generous. She was so generous and so genuine. And I felt like she always saw me, and she always took time to be interested in me. And that felt so generous, especially when I felt so small compared with how huge Anne's influence and reach and impact is. But she never thought of it that way, I don't think. I mean, her approach was very sort of, we're all in this together. You know, no one was beneath her time or attention. And you really got that feeling from her, and it made you feel so special, especially coming from her. After she died, I shared with some friends that I kept thinking about how Anne would kiss me on the cheek when she said hi or bye sometimes. And I was always so struck with that because it was so sweet. It was so sort of sweet and supportive and loving and so sort of otherworldly. And it always, I felt like it calmed me down. It like slowed me down. I was like, it helped me be present. It was such a lovely gesture. And just, I still feel like so warm and cared for when I think of just the thoughtfulness of that little gesture. I've been thinking of all kinds of little memories of Anne. And the funny thing is that I haven't been thinking of big specific memories. Instead, I just kind of have these flashes of seeing Anne at a party or at an event, or seeing her walking to, you know, a session at ACS or one of the Women in Cheese gatherings. And there were so many moments like that, I think because she was so tall that I always could, and she was so iconic, you know, she just had an iconic Anne Saxelby look. So she was so easy to spot in the crowd. And it was like I would smile and my heart would jump just thinking like, oh, great. Like Anne's here. And there were so many moments like that. And what a nice thing for people to think when you entered a room or when someone noticed you somewhere. I think that really, to me, in a way, that speaks to like how Anne was and what she meant to me. That it was always good news when I spotted her in a crowd.
Thank you, Alina, for those kind words about Anne and the stories that you just told. Thank you. I'd also like to talk about maybe one of the fondest memories. I don't know if we could talk on air on this. Maybe one of you guys can tell me no, stop being crazy. But did Carlos or Aaron, did you guys ever go out to have drinks with Anne? I feel like she always was good about getting everyone out to go for a drink at like the Clover Club or something like that. Do you have any fond memories of her when you guys went out after a cheesemonger counter session or something?
I certainly had many, many drinks with Anne. I was, I mean, we just, yeah, like I said sort of earlier, we would go out after our shifts and meet up in the West Village or, I mean, I can't tell you how many times we all ended up at Jimmy's, number 43 in the Village. And, I was going back and reading some of my old, chats and emails with Anne, and like I feel like the oldest one that I could find easily was just chatting with Anne on GChat, and her being like, "So are we at Jimmy's again?" And I'm like, "I can't tonight. We've spent too much money at Jimmy's this week. We need to go somewhere else." so many times, we ended up just. I think that this sort of secretly moved the cheese scene forward so much in New York, the fact that all of us, like all of the people that were doing the work, we weren't the Rob Kaufelds and we weren't the, Terrence Brennan's or Max McCallman or whomever. Yeah, we weren't the name brands, but we were younger and we were the ones running the things behind the show. And the fact that we, and I include, you know, Liz Thorpe, I think, in there, Tyler Hawes, you know, Zoe, Natalie Jordy was around, Sasha Davies, gosh, I'm sure I'm forgetting so many people, but like all of us would get together and Alex Garcia and just hang out together and kind of talk shop. And then we would go and, you know, get going quite hungover, I imagine, the next day. And I remember just getting shit from my bosses being like, I just saw Anne's email blast and she's got this cheese. Why aren't we out getting that cheese? And it's like, well, Anne's Anne. And she, she wears her brand and her honesty on her sleeve. And, if people didn't think we might screw them over somehow or not pay a bill or, maybe it would be a different story, but Anne is, she's a person of her word. But yeah, we drank a lot, I guess, is the short answer.
Well, and that makes sense because it's Cheesemongers College, I feel like, is what we went to. I was at Kettle of Fish a lot in the day, so not Jimmy's, yeah. But that just means I was in the wrong year. That's the only difference. I also wanted to ask if you guys ever co-hosted an episode with her and what was that like? Because I actually never had the chance to co-host an episode with her, which I'm sad because I was always hoping to do that one day.
You know, I didn't co-host with her, but I had two shows with her early on. One when you know, I was sort of interviewed by her and Sophia and sort of introduced for the work that I was doing in Mexico. And then in that episode we talked so much about Mexican cheese, and then she came back and said, why don't we have some of these these Mexican cheesemakers talk to us? And I was kind of blown away. And I was like, of course we can do that, right? And so that was their sort of her way of always sort of opening up the spaces. You know, I was looking at it. It's almost 10 years now that show came out. And so we did that show with two Mexican cheesemakers. And I came to the show to sort of help out with the questions and the translation and all of the things. Of course, the Mexican cheesemakers didn't need my help because, you know, they're very adequate themselves. But what was really fun was, being there in the studio and being with her was how genuinely she actually cared and the attention she paid. And so it was, I think about it now a lot when I'm recording my own shows of like, am I doing as good a job as what I have seen other of the hosts doing this show? And I actually think this a lot, and, you know, not just because of passing, but I actually think about it when I'm listening when I go out and listen to what other people have done. It is big shoes to fill.
Hear. That is, I mean, I'm with you.
Speak for all the former hosts where you're doing just fine, Carlos. You're more than holding up the your end of it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and with that, I want to mention, so I didn't know Sophie so well, and Elena had to school me on this. Sophie is one of the early producers and co-host with Anne on the program, I guess, for many years. I have to tune back now and go through some of the older episodes. But I got in touch with Sophie, and I'd like to now read a note from her because she is actually out on her honeymoon. So I hope you're enjoying. Congratulations on getting married and your honeymoon. But I'm now going to try to read Sophie's note the best I can. So, okay, here we go. excuse me. Anne was my former mentor and boss for perhaps one of the most important jobs I will ever hold in my career. My work at Saxelby Cheesemongers has followed me to every job I've had since. And nearly 10 years and a different industry later, much of the way I approach work is thanks to Anne. Together, we hosted over 100 episodes on the Heritage Radio Network, sold thousands of pounds of Farmstead cheese to some of the finest restaurants in the world, biked through flooded Brooklyn post-Hurricane Sandy to save the cheese, taught curious eaters at outdoor markets, bars, and festivals, and ate a bunch of unforgettable meals. Here are some of the work lessons I learned from Ann Saxelby. 1. Strive to be an expert, but share knowledge freely with enthusiasm. Ann was a scholar of her discipline and always knew the most in the room, but only so that she could share with others and open the world of Farmstead foods to anyone interested. 2. Be shockingly nice to your customers. It will get you very far. Ann surprised both chef and civilian customers with her warmth and never wavered in her demeanor. She grew a loyal base, especially among the most demanding chefs. 3. There is no such thing as a cheese emergency. Ann used to tell me this, which she repurposed from one of her college art professors, and it's true. Very little in cheese, or in many lines of work, is actually an emergency. My deepest condolences to Ann's family. Thank you, Ann, for all that you did. You were a force. Thank you, Sophie, for that note. I really had to take a deep breath before I read it. You guys knew Sophie. I think she nailed it on that. Carlos.
I would say, Kara, that the quote that there is no cheese emergency is one that we use often at Lactography in Mexico, and I say it quite often to the people, to the team in Mexico. There is no cheese emergency. I got it also from Anne, and I think is something, and it's not to say that we're not doing important work, but that there has to be kind of a balance. And that's one of the things that I kind of was always, I guess, surprised that Anne seemed to do quite well, you know, to have this balance of a successful career, what seemed to be a happy family, a healthy marriage, and then sort of an inner life, you know, not only with her own projects, but writing a book and all that. That kind of balance, I think, is so unique, and hopefully so many of us are trying to achieve that balance as well. And I know running a shop is way, way hard, but I think that something is changing. There's not that expectation, I think, of the old guard that, you know, we need to work 24/7 and, you know, you have to, like, you know, that there's everything and it's an emergency. I think the new generation in stores have taken this sort of life balance to heart, and I think we're better for it as an industry.
Yeah, I get. Yeah, that's, and I think even with her books too, because I was in Green Grape Provisions the other day, and they had a huge display of her last book, which was New Rules of Cheese: A Freewheeling and Informative Guide. I think even through the title, it kind of gives us a peek into Anne's sort of sensibilities. Do you think she was always trying to change the industry or break the rules per se? I feel like you've kind of mentioned it before, but she just, I don't know, she had like this innate sense to things, and just, I don't know, she was so ahead of the cheese game with the artisanal American. I mean, it was coming, but like the way she understood it, I don't know.
I mean, I would say that this is a bit in part, yes, her force and her personality and her sort of like interest in the world. I would say also it has to do with being a New Yorker. And, you know, now that I'm not a New Yorker, I kind of think about it, you know, often of what it actually means to be kind of in what is imagined to be the center of the world and to be, and to have access to what it would seem everything. And so if you have access to everything, what is that other thing you're looking for? And I think that was that's also part of why Saxelby at the store could exist in New York as opposed to, you know, some other city in the United States. And I think that she and her team and you know, understood that early on, and they were able to sort of show spotlight cheesemakers, and then other stores around the country started, you know, paying attention to those ones. And so I think that was also incredibly generous of, like, you know, doing the work and using the power of, you know, New York City for good, which, you know, can be used for bad a lot, actually.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Carlos. I wanted to bring up a fun fact about Anne. When I was listening to one of her episodes where Elena asked her how she once produced the show, she used to compose her episodes while riding her bicycle around on the way to Bushwick. I can't do that. That's for sure. How do you guys, maybe Aaron, how do you describe Anne's work ethic? And maybe what did you most admire about it?
Yeah, I think her work ethic and her energy level is just, I mean, as someone who, like, I own a retail store and that requires a certain level of work ethic, but I ain't got nothing on Anne. And I think very few of us do. You know, I think also back on your last point, like, she had maybe I'm just misunderstanding her, or maybe I just can't imagine this quality, this combination and how she managed to balance it. But she had, no one touches as many people or becomes as successful as she did without having ambition. And I think it would be inappropriate to say that she wasn't deeply ambitious, but at the same time, she didn't seem hurried about it. And she carried with that ambition an almost, like, paradoxical amount of humility. And I feel like those are such unusual, that's such an unusual combination to have a great deal of ambition and a great deal of humility in the same package. And I think that just that maybe both of those things stem from just a nuclear fusion internal reservoir of energy and get up and go-ness that I certainly don't have, and on my best day wish that I could tap a fraction of that resource. But she just managed to, you know, you mentioned this idea, or I'm sorry, it was Sophia, I think, that said you know, she was the smartest person in the room, but mm-hmm. unlike, say, myself, like, she never beat anybody over the head with it. And whenever I was around her, it was just a great reminder to be like, oh yeah, you can be someone that touches people, someone with great enthusiasm and ambition, without climbing over other people or pushing anyone else out of the way. There's room for all of us here. And if you just do a great job at the thing that you're passionate about, with a dash of luck, good things will come to you.
Thank you, Aaron. I've heard this is her family's way, even, but I think Anne put her own spin on it too, which I agree was one of her most important qualities. I want to also read to you Diane Stemple, longtime book reviewer on Cutting the Curd. She also sent us a note that I will quickly read. She said, Anne Saxelby was an amazing person, gifted, talented, sweet, and a sweetheart. So double sweetness. She had it all. It's such a loss for our community. I recall when she invited me to her show way back, I felt so honored. She was always so gracious and accepting. Whatever you did or said was fine with her. Besides being an amazing host, she did more for small American cheesemakers than anyone else ever has. This is her true legacy. She started her little store to promote the smallest cheese people, and it took off. This is what she accomplished for cheese. Love, Diane. Thank you, Diane, for sending in that really amazing note. For Anne, I think I wonder if Anne were still here today, what we would all want her to know. I think it would probably be that, like, her family is well taken care of, her shop is in good hands. She has the best cheesemongers. I hope we can all continue to support her ideology every day, because I'm sure most of us will think of her often.
Thank you, Kara, for doing this, because I know how hard it is for you as well. And we're here trying to put the brave face in front of this. And I agree with you. I think that what we can say to this idea is that we will continue, hopefully, on the work that she was doing, and that we are, that I will personally try to do that as well. Before her passing, I had talked to her 2 weeks before. We had a Zoom call for an interview. She was going to write something on raw milk cheese. And over the height of the pandemic, we were in two panels talking about American producers and things. And so I had spent time with her preparing for those panels, and then in the panels, and then this talk. And one of the things that sort of she said during the last time that we talked was how happy she was that there was so many more people, sort of caring about, artisanal cheese, raw milk cheese specifically, and that it didn't feel that it was so alone anymore. And I think that I hope that, people that are listening kind of hear that, because it is really the people that are listening to this show that, will continue the work. I think it's important that, this is not only on us, the hosts of Cutting the Curd today, but, we can hope to achieve some of the things that she did, for caring for those ideas. Maybe revolutionary with a little bit of hunger for the world, like Aaron was saying. I think we can all do that.
Yeah, indeed. I hope so too. I want to thank you both for being on the show today with me. I know we all put a lot of work into this, and I hope we're doing her legacy justice. I would like to put out to the listeners out there, the network, Heritage Radio Network, is creating an audio tribute. So if you'd like to send in a memory or message, you can email or send a voice memo to tribute@heritageradionetwork.org or call 203-998-5636 to record a message. Also, if you would like to donate to the Ann Saxelby Legacy Fund, please donate at slowfoodusa.org/Saxelby. Also, if you would like to follow Ann's shop on Instagram, you can follow them at Saxelby Cheese. You can follow us at Cutting the Curd. And we'll always miss you. Thank you for listening with us today. We hope this brings you some peace and comfort during this time. I'd like to close the program out with a few more notes from our other Cutting the Curd hosts, which we'll play right after this, from Greg Blaze and Jessica Kesselman. Until next time, thanks, and eat more cheese.
Hello, this is Gregory Blaze. I'm a former host of Cutting the Curd. I came on right after Ann started in the earlier stages of the show, and Bushwick and Roberta's were a little bit more rock and roll then. It was a little different. It was one of the last vestiges of Bushwick and those areas that became less dangerous, and Roberta's came in there. Patrick made the Heritage Radio, and the story from there to how Cutting the Curd got formed is a longer story. But I was over at the Saxelby's one night at the old house, and Ann was playing with Josie on the bed, and Patrick and I were in the kitchen eating some giant slab of meat he had brought home from Heritage. And you know, and I think he might have also, you know, I might have been, you know, smoking a giant joint at the time when they asked me if I wanted to take over the show. And I was like shocked. I was a shocked person. It filled me with like such a great sense of responsibility. And I immediately called my friend Emily Acosta, and she helped me produce anything and everything. Sophie as well. She was rotating out of the city, I believe, and went to Washington. I learned a lot from Jack Inslee and Aaron Fairbanks. Great people. They were the Aaron was the station honcho at the time, and Jack was the engineer. And they taught me so much, and Emily helped me explore parts of the world of cheese that I didn't know existed, you know? Took me all over the world, just like every project that I've been lucky enough to be involved with. And Annie and I, we were on the same team. She's a fellow traveler, fellow warrior, peaceful warrior. And, you know, she knew I would, I'd follow her lead, and I tried to as best I could. We had fun in there, never took ourselves too seriously, did some great episodes on drunken cheese stories, and just delved into training cheesemongers and traveling, doing interviews overseas, just things I dreamed about doing when I was in college, you know, trying to be, you know, figuring out my life. And I was wondering how I could be a cheesemonger and somehow still be a journalist at the same time. I don't know if I did that, but the opportunity that Anne gave me, and just the feeling of being in the studio and being able to check in with her on creative projects, and just having fun, you know, using cheese as a force for good through mass communications. And we were a little ahead of some other podcasts. Now everybody's got a podcast, I guess. But I really enjoyed my time on Cutting the Curd. It was amazing. Annie was amazing. Amazing to turn that job over to me. And I hope I did okay. And working with Diane and Emily and all of the people that we interviewed, that's a time in my life that I'll never forget. And Annie is a close friend that I will always remain close to me in my heart. So, honey, I hope I did a good job for you. And I miss you. Signing off. This is Gregory Blaze for Cutting the Curd.
Hi, this is Jessica, one of the current hosts of Cutting the Curd. I just wanted to share a little story about Anne. I met Anne on my first day working in cheese ever. It was at Murray's Cheese Shop, and I was intimidated, and I really didn't know very much about what I was doing. Anne was training me. It was her last day at Murray's, and I had a few hours with her. She was incredibly passionate. She was gracious and patient, and she set me up for success that day. She pretty much told me, you know, the ropes about customer service and cutting cheese, and she gave me some great tips about how to approach the job without feeling overwhelmed. And what I remember the most about that day was her smile, her enthusiasm, and just the way people responded to her, her coworkers, customers. It's no surprise to me that she then went on to launch Saxelby Cheesemongers to connect with chefs all over the city, all over the country. Through the years, it was clear everyone in this industry somehow has a connection to Anne. I have found several paths I've taken since that first day are connected to Anne, including this podcast. It's always been great to run into her at conferences, at her shop, at gatherings. I'm going to miss that a lot. And what is really, really striking to me is just how unified and collected we are as a community around Anne. I just wanted to share a little bit about that first day.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk, cooked, pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.